Gentlemen, good morning, councillors and council staff. I declare the meeting opening at 9:30 this morning. Thank you for coming. I'd like to first to acknowledge the Quandamooka people, who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet, and I pay respects on your behalf to the elders past, present and emerging. Evacuation. In the event of an evacuation, I would ask that you remain calm and follow my directions. The emergency exit is through the gallery on the doors to your left and down the stairwell to Bloomfield Street. Public conduct at meetings. All members of public present at a council meeting must A, not without the prior approval of the chairperson, make an audio or video recording or take any photographs. B, remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. C, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards and items that cause a hazard or interfere with the persons present. D, be suitably dressed. And E, turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn all members of the public present at the meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements and may, with or without such warning, require the person to leave the meeting and not return for such period as the chairperson decides. This period may include future meetings. Leaves of absence. I do have a leaves of absence for Mayor Karen Williams. Can I please have a mover for that? Move Councillor Paul Bishop, seconded Councillor Edwards. All in favour? Carried unanimously. Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Talpey, Councillor Elliott are not present. Why they're not present, or I don't have a reason here, so no, don't have to. I'm also down to our devotional section. I'd like to give Reverend Jim DeWitt from Redlands Christian Reformed Church will now lead council a brief devotional segment. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to come and to be a part of this meeting, and for the privilege to open the meeting. And I, on behalf of the churches, I really just want to say thank you to you councillors for the work that you do. It's much appreciated, and we live in a great city because of the work you do, so thank you. I don't know if you're like me, but you've been rushing around this morning to sort of and make it here, and then you get here on time and you sort of think, I haven't even stopped to catch my breath. And so I think this part of the meeting is a chance to do that, to catch your breath, to think about why we're here, what we're doing, what you are doing, and just to pause and reflect. I was at Ormiston State School the other day, and up on the wall in the classroom I was in, they've got the Golden Rule. And I think we all know the Golden Rule. Well, do you? There's a question. We know the Golden Rule, which is do to others as you would have them do to you. So the people at Ormiston State School and the students think that's really important. And just to be a reminder, those words come from the lips of Jesus. Another time he was summarising the commandments, and he said, summarising that the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength, to love your neighbour as yourself. Of these two, these two commandments hang the law and the prophets. And it's he's saying, so everything we do is summarised in this way. And just particularly looking at the last bit, to love your neighbour as yourself, to do to others as you would have them do to you. I thought, what does that look like? What would that look like for us? And what would it look like in our everyday life, but also in a council meeting? And I came across the acronym SALT. So it's pretty easy to remember, because SALT is something that we use for flavouring things. And so the acronym SALT, and so S is the idea to serve, which is what councillors do. You're to be there for others, to be ready to help. To think about what is needed, not just for yourself, but in the wider community. So that's S. Salt is to serve. A is to appreciate, and it's that idea to show appreciation of others, to applaud good effort, to recognise good effort, to see accomplishments of people, to say thank you regularly. So that's the A. Appreciate others. The L is love, which is, you know, to love your neighbour as yourself, to be sacrificial, to show you care about people and about the work that you're doing, and to do that without expecting things in return. And then T is that idea of treasure, value others, show kindness, respect, no matter who the person is, no matter their past, no matter their opinions, no matter your personal differences. It's about treasuring them, respecting them, valuing them. And I think if we do that in everyday life, people will recognise it and see the difference. And so I was just thinking about a meeting like this. Would you be able to say at the end of the meeting, no matter what was discussed, that they cared about one another? That SALT acronym applied to the council meeting and to the interactions with people. And that they valued people, that they cared for each other. So that's just a reflective thought. I'm taking it into my day, and that perhaps you can too, into your day, into this meeting. Now let's pray together. Dear wise and loving Father, we thank you. We thank you for this day. We thank you for the beautiful weather we could wake up to for this day, which has many opportunities in it. We thank you for this beautiful city that we're privileged to call home. We thank you for its natural beauty. We thank you for its wonderful infrastructure. And we thank you, Lord, for those who work hard to ensure that those are in place. Lord, we thank you for this council. We pray especially this morning for the Deputy Mayor, Lance Hewlett, as he leads this meeting. We pray for each councillor. Lord, we ask that you would graciously grant them just a joy in the task that they're called to do, recognising the privilege that is entrusted to them. We pray that you'd give them wisdom to govern amid conflicting interests and issues of our days, a sense of the welfare and the true needs of the people, a keen thirst for what is right, confidence in what is good and fitting, the ability to work together in harmony, even through disagreement. Lord, as we lay this agenda before you, we pray that that it would be worked through in a way that would benefit the lives of those who live and work in this city. Grant all of them wisdom and courage to know what to do, what is right and true and good. May they speak out when it's time to speak, listen patiently and respectively when it's time to listen. May they always be guided by the idea of a spirit of community and justice, of love and mutual respect. We just pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend. Appreciate you coming in. Thank you. Thank you. We now move on to item 4, declaration of interest of any items of business. Councillors are reminded of their responsibility in relation to a councillor's material personal interest and conflict of interest at a meeting. For full details, see Division 5A of the Local Government Act 2009 and appendix to running sheet. Details of these responsibilities are also outlined in the agenda. I would also remind you that declarations can be made at any time throughout the meeting. Item 5, records of achievement. I have not been advised of any. 6, receipt and confirmation of minutes. May I have a mover and a second that the minutes of the general meeting held on the 20th of February be confirmed? Moved, Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Edwards. Any comments? Any? All good. Those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 7, matters outstanding from previous general meeting. I'll now hand over to the CEO to discuss those points.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. The only item there is that opportunity to participate in the Lloyd Joint Local Government Activity on the Regional Approach to Waste and Resource Management. That report's coming to us at the end of the year.
Thank you, CEO. On to item 8, public participation. In accordance with S31 of Policy 3127 Council Meeting Standing Orders, a period of 15 minutes may be made available by resolution permit members of the public to address the local government on matters of public interest relating to local government. Priority will be given to members of the public who have made written application to do so. Can I have a mover and a second that the meeting adjourn for 15 minutes to allow public participation segment to allow members of the public to address council? Move, Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Those in favour? Carried unanimously. You may have noticed the signage in the chamber regarding public participation at meetings. It is council's usual practice to require any person wishing to address the meeting to state their name, suburb and organisation they represent, and the subject they wish to speak about. This information is recorded in the minutes of the meeting, which is a public document available for inspection at Council's administrative building and published on the Council website. I also advise that the meeting is being recorded in audio video and that anyone speaking acknowledge and agree that the recording video may be placed in the public domain. Any person addressing the meeting will A, state their name and suburb or organisation they represent, subject and the subject they wish to talk about, B, stand unless they are unable to do so, C, act and speak with decorum, D, respectful and courteous, make no comments directed at any individual council employee, councillor or member of the public, ensuring that all comments relate to council as a whole. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to 1, consider each application on its merits, and consider any relevant matter in making my decision to allow or disallow a person to address local government. Give priority to members of the public who may have made written application to the CEO to address this meeting. 3, determine the maximum number of speakers based on the number of persons wanting to speak and the time available. Each speaker has a maximum of 5 minutes dependent on the number of speakers. 4, withdraw the approval to address council before the time period has elapsed. And I believe the first speaker is Alison Lang. If you'd like to go to this. Thank you, Alison. If you could just state your name and where you're from, thank you.
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity to address you. My name's Alison Lang and I'm from Russell Island and I represent the Friends of Russell Island Swimming Pool. We have over 150 members who are concerned about this facility and want to make it a better place. Unfortunately, I did apply for some information regarding the swimming pool and there's a memorandum of understanding between council and the state government, and I also applied for some other information from council and that hasn't been forthcoming. But regardless of that, I do have a lot of research that I've done. There's a few issues regarding the swimming pool that we're concerned about. Probably the most fundamental one is the hours of it opening. Currently the swimming pool is only open 32 hours a week. It's actually closed on Tuesdays and Thursdays every weekday. It is closed every weekday between the hours of 10 and 3 o'clock, which are the hours, of course, that one wants to swim. It's open on the weekends between 10 and 5. Also, we're concerned about the way that the gardens and the surrounds of the pool have fallen into disrepair. It's very dusty and the grass is weedy and horrid, and it's also infested with ants. We also don't have a shop. We have no access to get to the pool, to use FPOS to go into the pool. Something that councillors may not be aware of is that there was a special levy imposed on Russell Island residents which raised $400,000 to actually construct the pool. So together with other rates and taxes, we've actually paid for that pool twice and now we're locked out of the pool. It's not that we can go swimming elsewhere on the island, as the swimming pool enclosure that you will see near the jetty is broken and is an eyesore actually. And unlike mainlanders, when it's very hot, we can't just go down to the mall or go to the theatre or something like mainlanders. We've conducted a survey of 20 southeast Queensland swimming pools, and every single one of those pools is open every single day. And the other thing I was surprised about is they're all open all winter. The thing is with Russell Island Swimming Pool, we have solar heating, we have lights, neither of these fabulous facilities are used. The swimming pool is really underused. We're actually locked out more than we're locked in, we're allowed in. We're allowed into the swimming pool 32 hours a week. The average amount of time that other communities in southeast Queensland are allowed into the pool, into their pool, the average is 94 hours a week. So We have less than a third the time that other communities have. I mean, being locked out all day Tuesday and Thursday is just beyond my belief, and also every between 10 and 3 every weekday. Bizarre. Especially in the light of the Healthy Redlands campaign that we see, which I think there's been over 70,000 spent promoting Healthy Redlands. The only thing we've seen on the islands is one yoga class once a week. It seems such a shame with the pool. It's a great facility that's not being used. I'd also like to draw your attention to a couple of reports. The Queensland Chief Health Officer report said that obesity is up 22% in outer regional areas, and 76% of disadvantaged areas people are obese, and as we know, Russell Island is a disadvantaged area. And 39% of obese people don't meet the regular physical activity. And with our average age of 55 on the island, 67% of people around that age are obese. Interestingly, the Royal Life Saving Association of Australia report said that the average aquatic facility creates 2.72 million a year of value to the community. The reason for this is that physical inactivity costs the health system $3.7 billion and leads to health and disability costing $48 billion a year. Insufficient physical activity is responsible for 5% of deaths and disability. But a weekly visit to the pool is enough to take most people out of the physical inactivity category. With over 70,000...
Ms. Lang, you've gone over your 5 minutes. Would you mind winding it up? Thank you.
Okay, I'll just wind it up by saying that we definitely want to see the pool open every day. We want to see it open through winter. And as we paid for it, I think it's only fair that the council does what every other council does in Australia and give us that facility. Thank you.
Thank you. I also have that Gina Swanell would like to speak. But Gina, if you could just state your name and where you're from, thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Gina Swanell. I am a resident of Russell Island and a relatively new resident to Russell Island. I just want to point out to you that when I was researching actually moving to Russell Island, that I did look up the council facilities, the community facilities, the rates, the certain just the things that you do when you're going to buy a home. Now, when I googled the Russell swimming pool, Russell Island swimming pool, I was given the information, it's, I mean, everybody can see it, that the Russell Island pool was open from 6:30 a.m. till 6:30 p.m. 7 days a week, and included a gym. Now, nobody was more surprised than me that when I arrived on Russell Island, that not only was this inaccurate, it was completely and utterly wrong. Right? I did not have access 7 days a week. There is no gymnasium there. Then, I just want to point out that I think everyone, if we follow this religious man that was just here, and it's that do it unto, have, you know, do to each other how we'd like to be treated. Well, it's pretty obvious by the statistics that we've got from the pool research that we did that Russell Island is not treated like everybody else. Everybody else has got, we'll just use Cleveland, everybody else has got available hot foods, cold foods and drinks, the opportunity to buy goggles, etc. from a kiosk, FPOS facilities, and is open all winter. Now, surely I cannot be the only person that can see how wrong that is. We are excluded, we are treated differently to everybody else. Now, we had a protest on Russell Island recently. Councillor Edwards was there. His suggestion was that we take on board and make a committee, and that Royal Russell Island residents, we take on board the management and issues with the pool. That's not our job. That's your job. It's the job of the council, right, to provide this. It's not a facility that needs to be a money-making facility. It would be great if it held its own, but in my research, I spoke to different mayors, and there is one pool in particular in a town called Henty that has better facilities, longer opening hours, with the grand population of 60 people. So with our island population, and if you want to include the other islands who would use our pool, Macleay definitely uses our pool, I want to know how the islanders raised $400,000. The council took on board that, took that money, and then you have given the pool to the education department with no consultation with the Russell Island community at all. This is the age of accountability and transparency, and I put to you that you are failing. Right? You failed to notify any of us of any of this. Right? So any distribution, anything that you're doing, we're totally oblivious. The contract or the whatever flash name that you've given to the deal you've done with the education department, that doesn't come up until April next year. Right? We're not prepared to wait another year and a couple of months to get this sorted. FPOS now is so easy, so cheap. I buy my fruit and vegetable from a man with a little white box. Right? I'm all of value-wise, I'm good for $10. So there's no excuse. You're also missing with an Australian tradition. Right? Many of you, I dare any of you argue that when you went to the pool as a kid, did you get money for an icy pole? Hands up. I did. It was part of the gig. Right, so you've made it impossible, right, for islanders to even buy an icy pole. Goggles. Children hate chlorine in their eyes. Do they forget their goggles? Most certainly they do. Do they expect to be able to buy them at the pool? Most certainly do they do. Can they buy them at Russell Island? They most certainly can't. So,
Miss Wendell, you've just gone over your 5 minutes.
That's
you
a shame.
Up, please?
Damn it. Yeah, well, I think I've made my point clear. You are discriminating against us.
Thank you. We'll move on, and thank you for both speakers this morning. Please, would you? Thank you to both speakers. Could I please have a mover and a second that the meeting be resumed, please? Move Councillor Edwards, second to Councillor Gleeson. Petition item 9, petitions and presentations. In favour, sorry, my apologies. Carried unanimously, thank you. Carried unanimously, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a petition from residents of Macleay Island requesting the council provide weather protection and seating at the new council designated taxi rank on Macleay Island. We consider these requirements essential to provide a safe environment for the many elderly or disabled passengers who use the taxi service regularly. And I move that the petition is of an operational nature and be received and referred to the Chief Executive Officer for consideration.
I've got a second for that motion, please. Seconded Councillor Mitchell. Any comments? More comments, Councillor Edwards?
Yes, I'll quickly address it. For Council recently spent a considerable amount of money redeveloping the foreshore at Macleay Island and has provided additional parking there. Part of that redevelopment included a taxi rank, and as you may know, that the taxi provides the predominant transport on the island. And where the taxi location is, it's a short walk from the jetty. However, it's in the open where people have to stand, and there's no seating and there's no shade. And we do have an elderly population over there, and sometimes you could be waiting 20 minutes, 25 minutes for the taxi somewhere else, and in the sun and the rain, it's quite an impost on residents to have to stand there. We do have a bus shelter separately away from that, but we don't have a regular bus service there. So the taxi is important, and I'd just like councils to consider that in the future when we're looking at providing infrastructure. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. I'll just take the vote on that. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. I believe, Councillor Hughes, you have a presentation for us.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I have indeed. On Monday the 4th of February, both Councillors Wendy Bolgari and myself attended the Going Local, the New Economy, Economics of Place Masterclass. The one-day event was held at My Horizon Capalabar and was attended by about 40 interested professionals from all over southeast Queensland. We came together to hear guest keynote speaker Michael Schumann, who was an economist, attorney, author and entrepreneur from the US, and he's focused the discussion on the re-localisation and the value of a strong local financial movement, with his expertise focused on community economics. And although the title mentions the word new, we all know and promote the value of buying locally made produce and services, and we all love our local tradies. Joining Michael as a joint keynote speaker was a very entertaining and gritty Gilbert, and I'm going to pronounce his name incorrectly, I'm sure, but Rochelle. One of Australia's most successful placemakers, who has gained international recognition for his inspirational approach and innovative thinking to community activation and enlivened community projects. Sharing stories and hosting discussion on how local businesses and communities can take control of their own backyard via strong placemaking and local economic development, producing a positive change to enhance and flourish both business and community lifestyle. The host of the masterclass was our own councillor Paul Bishop, who supported the event personally, sharing his passion and advocacy, particularly for locally grown produce, and an engaging audience. He was very, very good as MC, as many of us have witnessed previously, and I'd like to thank Paul for promoting this really important topic with such zeal. Thank you. The event cost was $340 per person to attend and was paid for from the councillor's discretionary training budget. I would like to thank council and my colleagues for the opportunity to attend. It was thought-provoking, topical and timely to focus on the challenges and opportunities for community to come together in supporting of forging and focusing on a stronger and more resilient local economic business model here in our beautiful Redlands City. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. That's lovely. Item 10, order of business. Do I have any requests to order the Councillor Bishop?
I just thought it's worth noting that my involvement with that particular event was honorary. There's no fiscal involvement. It was purely a devotion on my part. There was no benefit from my involvement in any fiscal dealings. So
thank you, Councillor Bishop. Thanks. Seems there's no change to the order of business, so we move on to reports. So I have a move of item 12.1, please. Councillor Edwards, would you like to present the report, please?
Yes, I move 12.1, operational plan quarterly performance report, December 2018. I move the officers. Recommendation to note.
Seconded by Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
This is a quarterly report that comes to us against the operational plan, and this is for the second quarter from 1st of October to 13th of December. It's under the Act that the CEO must present a written assessment of Council's progress. We have the issues of significant activities defined within the operational plan. We've got 65 that are on track, 3 that are monitoring, and 2 that are complete, that make up 70. The ones that are under monitoring is the council is committing to continue its collaborative work with Condamuga, Aboriginal Corporation. Also identify and protect places of European heritage significance, and also develop a master plan for Redlands aquatic redevelopment. Overall, seems to be progressing in line with what we'd expect.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any speakers against? Any comments? Councillor Bishop?
Thank you. Just a comment. Obviously this is critical for council. It's how officers are impelled to do what the community has asked and what councillors oversee. When we come to dot point two, green living, I'd just like to acknowledge that as a result of the last general meeting's vote, the focus shifting internally to the organisation means that advocacy on behalf of the broader community and their involvement in green living type processes is no longer reflected in this document, and I think that's a shame. Just want to point that out. So that's all. Thanks.
Councillor McGlory, you have a comment?
I just want to give a comment on promoting the Quantum of Couturus initiative. Recently in the revamp of Wellington Point Village, we've now got it named Wellington Point, and we've got Cullen Cullen underneath it. And I'd just like to say how much that has been received favourably by the locals there. They're very interested in that First Nation history of the area, and Cullen Cullen actually means gathering place where we gather for food, and you know, 65,000 years we're still doing it. And it's been surprising to me the interest it has actually sparked, which I think is fantastic, and it's really great with the tourism down there as well. And the other one I was just wondering, is there any update on page 26, identify and protect places of European heritage significance?
Is there one of the officers?
Is there any update on that one? I can take that on notice, sorry.
Take that on notice. Thank you, Councillor McGlory. Any other comments? Nothing more, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Could I have a mover for item 12.2, please? Move, Councillor Hughes. Would you like to present it, please, Councillor?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Moving item 12.2, Community Consultation Activity Plan, Local Law and Subordinate Local Law Number 4.
Seconded, Councillor McGlory. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. It is in the report. I think the focus here, Councillor Boglari may speak to the Ormiston Kayak Pontoon that has generated a large amount of community interest that may have some background to this. Thank you.
Speakers against? Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I get a clarification before I speak? On the bottom of page 35, it lists that they need to prohibit activities in order to prevent nuisance. But I'm not understanding exactly what activities. Are we getting people going there using kayak ramps for other things like jet skis and things? Or what is the nuisance that we're trying to prevent, please?
Lee, are you able to answer that question?
Deputy Mayor, the nuisance activities are things where they're using pontoon jetties for activities other than what they were designed. So skylarking, jumping off and using them for purposes and other than that which they were designed.
Okay.
So this is a change to the schedule in that local law that allows us to govern the use of those pontoons.
So we're just going to leave that open to interpretation? Well, that's my next question. The report notes that we have an ongoing review of the way we carry out community consultation in relation to local laws, but seeks to not wait for that, but to go ahead and carry out community consultation with what is probably, and certainly is in my view, a flawed process. So why would we move to community consultation when the report itself acknowledges that we're currently reviewing our community consultation process for local laws?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, I mean, this is dealing with an issue at the moment, particularly with one particular new pontoon, and that's why it's been it's ahead of that process that we said we would follow. That we're actually dealing with, it really relates to one specific issue at the moment, so it's a way of amending the local law to add that to the schedule. But we're still doing that process that we've talked about in terms of the revising the consultation approach.
Well, I think for myself, If we've got laws that we need to review and change, that makes the urgency to review our process for that community consultation more urgent. We shouldn't be ignoring and overriding that. We should be bringing that forward so that we can then do this properly. So I won't be supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Telfy. Any speakers for? Councillor Baglari.
Thank you. I think in any local council these days there's new infrastructure, there's new technology, and as we put in these things in place within our city, our local laws, our policies, our guidelines all need to be updated to keep with them. And that's all this is. It's just an update on our local law to keep in train with our new infrastructure which we've had in place. We haven't had a kayak ramp before, so therefore it's got to be named in the local law. So this is simply to keep up to date with some issues now which get addressed on any jetty or any other water infrastructure around the city, but because it's called a kayak launching ramp rather than a jetty, we've just got to have that name included.
Thank you, Councillor Baglari. Any other speakers? Comments from Councillor Edwards? Are these comments, or Councillor Bishop, you're against, or a comment?
Thank you. I commend the canoe kayak process that we're going through. There's been a considerable amount of work done identifying in this city of shorelines, not only through my division and out of the islands. There's great possibility to improve the tourism and recreational activities for our residents. We have to get this right. I do understand. I heard yesterday of the problems that has been related to one of the pontoons, and if we address that correctly, it helps us in the process moving forward to make sure we get everything right. So, I'm happy for this to proceed as quickly and in a controlled way as possible, so that we can roll out other canoe launching and kayak launching facilities throughout the city. It's only going to be a benefit to everyone.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Councillor Bishop.
Thank you. Also, absolutely in support of the general idea of helping recreation, and if we think about that word, recreation is about the recreation of how we fill in our time, and as this applies, it's the recreation of laws. As we put new pontoons in, as we think about the Redlands Coast branding, we have to recreate how we deliver that sort of infrastructure. How do we get the feedback loops? The point I'd like to make is that we're going to go out to community consultation. Feedback from residents, not only during this period, but as new infrastructure and new processes come online about how we recreate, please let us know. Please engage with this process. And I note that it starts, if this does get supported today, the consultation phase starts on the 7th of March and will conclude on the 28th of March. So just letting residents know about that. Please engage. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Chair. First question to officers. Just want to know, with the review of the consultation process of the local laws, is there any sort of a timeline for that?
Thanks, Councillor Mitchell, through you, Deputy Mayor. Yes, the new consultation process is actually going to the next general meeting. So Councillor Tolby will be in a couple of weeks' time, the new consultation process. There's an urgent need at the moment, though, to deal with the local law around the activities happening at one particular pontoon right now.
Thank you. And just to carry on, certainly acknowledge that there's been some unforeseen impacts and there's a gap at the moment that we're going to probably close today. But the definitions around what's allowed and not allowed is really important. We need to get it right. Hopefully we can hasten slowly. We don't want to catch, the fair and honest users unnecessarily in the net. We want to promote these wonderful pieces of infrastructure. Let's just make sure that we don't slam doors that we don't intend to slam. Thank you.
Thank you, Mitchell. Any closing comments, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. No, I'm quite happy to move the officer's recommendation as stated, points 1 and 2.
Okay. Those in favour? Those against? Those in favour again, please. Councillor Baglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Hewlett, against Councillor Telfy and Councillor Gleeson. Thank you. I now want to report from Community and Customer Services. Can I have a mover for 13.1, please? Councillor Mitchell.
Yep, thank you. Just move 13.1, the decisions made under delegated authority for categories 1, 2, 3, DAs.
Can I have a second, please? Second to Councillor Bishop. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
Very briefly, just again, while these decisions can be made under delegated authority, I have been, councillors do review applications that come through and can intervene at any time if they choose. Thank you.
Any further comments from council? Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to speak to the last item of this report. It's on page 5 of 5, application ID SPS18/0003, reconfiguring a lot 1 into 7. I think if you pop across the column, you can see the description here is refused. This is in Division 8. This property has applied, obviously, 1 into 7 for a reconfigure of the lot. And with our new city plan, we have introduced an environmental significance overlay which covers parts of this site. The environmental significant overlay requires conservation as well as compensatory offset planting if trees are required to be removed. Under the old Redland planning scheme, the compensatory planting would not be relevant, thus easier to remove trees. So the applicant had applied to have this development assessed under the old Redland planning scheme. We have refused that, and it will be assessed under the new city plan. And I thank the officers for their diligence in assessing this reconfiguration of a lot and the refusal to be assessed under the old scheme. And we're very passionate about our trees here in Redland City, and it's really important. Thank you.
Councillor Telfy.
Can I have an explanation from officers from planning? Well, legal, we've always been given to believe that people had the option to be assessed for the first year under both the old or the new scheme. Can I have someone explain to me how that's different in this case?
I think you're going to track this, just a report to note. We can take that offline, I think. Okay. Happy to take that offline? This report's just to note. Okay, just while you come forward.
We're obviously open to an appeal and legal implications.
Yeah. Okay, well. Yeah. Thank you, Chris.
Through the chair. Yes, the Act allows an applicant to seek to have the application assessed, an application assessed under the superseded planning scheme within 12 months of the new planning scheme coming in. As part of that application or request, council considers what is the difference between the two schemes and what is the potential compensation risk, which is obviously a big matter to be considered. That looks at what is the difference or the potential difference in yield between the two schemes. So the assessment that officers did considered that there was negligible to no impact between yield. The only difference was likely to be the compensatory planting, which isn't a matter that's subject to compensation. So in officers' opinion, there was no risk of compensation, but there was a better outcome that could be achieved under the city plan than under the Redlands planning scheme, and that's where the decision came from.
Question? So if the applicant appeals, what the appeal would just be around whether they have to replant trees or not?
So the decision at this stage was simply which planning scheme it's assessed under. The next stage is the applicant lodges the application under the city plan and it's accordingly assessed. If at the end of that assessment process there's the normal appeal provisions that would apply regardless of the scheme that they apply under, but they also have at the end of that process the potential to seek compensation if they believe there's been a reduction in their yield they could have got under the old scheme.
Okay, so it's not a refusal of the 7 lots, it's just a refusal of assessment under the previous scheme.
That's right.
And it will still be coming forward, presumably.
Right. It'll be assessed under the current scheme.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Councillor Telfy. Councillor Elliott?
Through you to Chris. Chris, if the applicant re-lodges, are we going to give him consideration for the fees they've paid? Because it's virtually going to be really close to the same application, so...
So at this stage, they simply have lodged the request to have it assessed under the superseded planning scheme, so there's a minor fee for that consideration. They didn't pay the entire full application fee. That will come about when they lodge the application for the 7 lots.
No further comments or questions. Thank you, Chris, for that. Back to Councillor Mitchell. Going to come up, Councillor?
Just to note that the delegated authority system seems to work, and yeah, thank you very much. Move the motion.
I'll just move the officer's recommendation as provided in the report. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I've actually asked for an officer to be present to present the item, so if we could have the officer speak to it rather than me. Oh, sorry, I thought we were on shoreline.
No,
okay, well, happy to move the officer's recommendation for the court matters. Thank you.
In favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Now on to 13.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the officer's recommendation for items. Was it 13.3?
Do I have a seconder for that motion? Seconded Councillor Golay. Would you like to speak to Councillor Telfy?
I've asked for an officer to be present to give us an overall précis of what's involved in this report.
Chris, if you could come forward again.
Including the benefits to the community, please. The
seat should still be warm.
Through the chair. Morning, councillors. So the application before council is a proposed minor change to the shoreline development. The changes involved are primarily administrative, but there are some changes of note. The administrative changes relate to updating references to current planning legislation, so the current planning act, which has come in since the time of the shoreline approval. Reference to the latest regional plan, which has come in since that time, and the latest planning regulation, which has come in since that time. As well as that, there's amendments to the level of assessment naming, which is different under the new Planning Act, from self-assessable to accepted subject to requirements, etc. The second, I guess, tranche of changes are in relation to changes that happened as part of the city plan, which are different to the Redlands planning scheme. In relation to the definitions of community facility and temporary use. So those definitions are proposed to be amended in the plan of development to reflect the Redland City Plan, as well as that amending the level of assessment for those uses to reflect the Redland City Plan. So, for example, the community facility to be identified as code assessable as opposed to impact assessable within the town centre frame and residential precincts. And for a temporary use to be accepted development where it meets particular criteria or certain requirements which reflects the Redland City Plan. The third tranche of changes change is in relation to the poultry industry overlay. So it's seeking to remove that overlay as an applicable overlay to the plan of development. That reflects a previous assessment that was done as part of the subdivision applications that were lodged and assessed in 2017. So that application, or those applications, identified that the poultry overlay was not applicable, as the impacts had been assessed as not having an impact on the amenity of any future lots within the shoreline area. So it's reflecting that previous decision. The fourth tranche of changes are then changes to the conditions. Which the ones of note, I guess, are the change to the timing or part of the timing for the bring forward of the signalised intersection at the corner of Heinemann Road and Double Jump Road. So at present, that's sought to be provided prior to any change of use on the site. So it's amended to reflect that a temporary use can occur without that signalised intersection being brought forward at that time, as a temporary use wouldn't have an impact on that intersection that would necessitate that coming on. The other condition change of note is the requirement for a primary school within the shoreline area. At present, the condition requires that to be provided within the shoreline development area itself. Obviously, since that time, there's been an expansion of the urban footprint within the regional plan, so seeking to provide a bit more flexibility to the location of that school and identify it can be provided either on the shoreline development area or within 1 kilometre of that area. And the fifth tranche of changes are then reflecting new plans and reports that were submitted by the applicant in 2017. So as part of Council's approval of the plan of development, there are a number of plans that the Council didn't believe completely hit the mark. So the shoreline open space strategy, the biting insect management plan, the landscape strategy. In making its decision, Council has to consider whether it either complies or it can be made to comply through conditions. So at the time of that decision, Council decided that, well, there's some aspects of those plans that don't comply, but we can apply a condition requiring them to make amendments to those plans to make them comply. So in May 2017, in accordance with the conditions of the original approval, the applicant lodged new plans that incorporated the changes that Council required in its conditions. And so all that they're looking to do now is put those plans into the approved plan list. They're already approved, it's just to clean it up and put it in table one in the condition. So they're the changes. So officers have assessed those, assessed it in the report, and it's recommended for approval subject to amended conditions.
Kelsey?
Okay, thank you. Through you, Mr. Chair. Chris, so through this raft of changes, is there any foreseeable detriment beyond the original approval to the infrastructure that will be provided through the development or the infrastructure fees that will be collected? That doesn't change?
That's correct. There is still an infrastructure agreement between Council and the applicant, which isn't changing, isn't proposed to be changed as part of this minor change.
And I understand that the part of this suite of changes is to reflect our open space strategy, which will provide more centralised larger parks rather than small pocket parks that are not as manageable for Council. Is that correct? And overall, there won't be any less square meterage of parks in this master plan development. It will be that they will be reflecting our requirements for centralised parks. Is that correct?
Through the chair. They're not proposing to make that change.
There's no change
as part of this application.
Okay. There are some mentions in the details here of the commercial area of shoreline. Is there any significant change in this suite of changes to the way the commercial centre will be presented in relation to the main road?
No change.
Okay. And community consultation. There has been some community consultation on the overarching high-level plans for this. Are we removing any opportunity for the community to see the plans, to have the plans for the park and the commercial area? Will there still be an opportunity for community consultation on those big ticket items? Will this remove any possibility of other, you know, will it be different to how it would have otherwise been for community consultation?
Through the chair, no. That doesn't change the level of assessment in relation to centre uses, etc. The only change to the level of assessment is around the community facilities within the residential precinct and town centre frame from impact to code.
Okay, and I understand that's in relation to them being able to have a sales office prior to building the Heinemann Road intersection, because the way it was worded prevented even a coffee van or, you know, temporary facility being there during the construction. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes. The changes to the temporary use definition and levels of assessment are to enable a small temporary use to happen on the site without needing intersection upgrades, etc.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
You might want to stay there, Chris. Thank you, Councillor Telfair. Any speakers against? I'm taking against at the moment. Thank you. Councillor Wendt, Councillor Barry.
I'll speak against this one. Initially, this was a very controversial, I'm sure you remember, Chris, I think you were in the hot seat while it was all being discussed at the time. It was a very controversial development that was approved out of sequence, 10,000 people down the south with no infrastructure. I have concerns with this change because it, a material change of use, what's the definition we're giving this one? It's anything that doesn't take it back to the beginning, isn't it?
Through the chair, so they've lodged a minor change. So there's a minor change definition within the Act, but not substantially different development.
Yes. In my understanding in this one is that there's actually levels of assessment that have been changed. They've brought forward some parts of the city plan that they want to use into this one. So they've sort of, to me, cherry-picked the bits they want, because this at the moment is a pod, so it actually overrides the existing city plan at the time to have got approval, and now they're picking what they want. My concern is councillors don't fully understand any implication that this could have in it at this time. I've still got questions. And I thank you for answering them as much as you had time to over the last couple of days. But I'd like to actually, if this motion goes down, have a motion that we let this lie on the table for further discussion. I'd like to put that forward just as a preempt to councillors. The school, when we go through what you just have spoken about, the school was always part of the selling point for Shoreline, that they were, if they were going to have a school, they were going to provide a school. Now we're said that they want to have it changed, that actually doesn't have to go into the Shoreline area. And with the town centre, yesterday we talked about core and then we talked about a greater area. Could you explain that again, please? Because I do believe that's an impact.
Through the chair. So attachment two, I'll try and find which page the precinct plan is on just to help describe this.
Yeah, it's better on this, it was better on the screen with the colour.
You're right, it is page 138. So there's five different precincts within the precinct plan. The precinct in dark blue is the town centre. That's the core. That's the area where you would expect centre uses, retail, commercial uses. The area in the dark pink is the town centre frame precinct. So it's think of it like the median density residential precinct. It will, you know, it's intended to contain your townhouses and the like, multiple dwellings. And then the light pink is the residential precinct, which is your generally intended to be your standard residential product, detached houses, dual occupancies, etc.
So the difference in here is there's been a change in assessment in the dark pink area?
So the changes involve a change to the level of assessment for community facilities within the town centre frame, so the dark pink, and within the residential precinct, the light pink. So identifying that community facilities in the light pink, where they're up to 250 square metres gross floor area, are code assessable, not impact assessable. So changes proposed to change that level of assessment.
Okay, thank you. Were there any other levels of assessment changed in this? Because I notice when you go through here, which I've read several times, and there's a lot in this where there have been changes or actual conditions deleted. Were there any other levels of assessment changes?
No, just the two mentioned. So on page 112, it details all of the proposed changes in the table. So it's only the community facilities and temporary use that are supposed to be amended.
And can you explain to me a lot of the conditions now, and I think this is just administrative, but I just didn't get the clarity yesterday. A lot of the conditions are now put into a table, which are put into a condition. Do those conditions, or like the Mozzie management and all of that, do they still have the same strength going into the table and all those other ones that have now been deleted because or put in there? I'm just nervous that they don't have the same.
Through the chair. So it has no implications. Really, it is just a cleaning up. So the original approval the council gave said for these plans, fighting insect management plans, local landscape strategy, etc. Council endorses those, subject to the following changes that need to be made. And council put a condition on to say, lodge those plans with the following changes. So let's say 6 changes you must make to these plans. They came back and made those 6 changes, lodged the revised plans and said, here, council, we've done what you asked. Officers checked that. Yes, you've made the 6 changes, endorsed. So they are approved plans. All they're looking to do now is just put them into the approved plans table. So they have the same effect.
And the timing is the same? I believe it is, but it is all still the same on that. Yep. That Mozzie one is just so important to have in place, that was all. And I'm also just, can I just have clarity again about the density? So it's 15 per hectare. It was per in each lot. Now they want that over the entire lot. Can we just have clarity? Can that mean that some areas might be higher density now because it's harder to build in some of the lots by having it as a whole rather than in the different areas?
So the proposed change that they're putting forward is a note. So that's no statutory effect. It's just to provide an explanation really for the applicant that that they need to consider the overall density. It has no effect on the assessment. So the actual assessment that council will do for a reconfiguring a lot application within the development.
No, I just meant it, before there were so many lots and each lot had to have that specific density. Now I understand it's over the whole lot. So long as they get it at the end, it's okay.
No, so none of the assessment criteria in relation to subdivision are changing. The assessment of density will be the same yesterday as it is tomorrow, if change goes ahead. It's just a note to say that applicant, you need to consider your overall density plan.
The overall density, so this is where I'm trying to get it clarified. The overall density before was on the different areas within the whole development. Now it's just, now it's over the, instead of having 1, 2, 3, and each one had to achieve the density, now the density just has to be achieved over the whole lot. So the stages, each stage had to achieve the density, whereas now it's the complete one. And I think Councillor Elliott has mentioned this too, so if they get to the end and all of a sudden they haven't reached their density, we don't want a whole lot of townhouses put in. That's what we're trying to not achieve, and we had concerns and we were just discussing it that might happen. That's what I'm...
Through the chair. So if we have a look at what are the assessment criteria in relation to a reconfiguration. So on page 214 within the plan of development, so specific outcome S2.4 is relevant, which identifies that development within the shoreline residential precinct, which is that light pink area, must achieve the following outcome. Reconfiguration provides a mix of lot sizes to accommodate a variety of dwelling types. That's one of the criteria that we'll be assessing an application for subdivision against. There's also a dwelling unit density compatible with the detached low-rise character of the precinct. So that those outcomes are already in, that's what we will be assessing it against. Those are unchanged, they're not proposing to change.
So they can't get to the end, and because this is what councillors were just, you know, talking over coffee yesterday, we were concerned, what if they get to the end and they haven't achieved it? So that can't happen, it's still got to be through the stages?
That's right, each application will be assessed on its merits against the outcomes.
Okay, thank you. Shoreline landscape strategy, I couldn't see that listed in the table. Is that still there? It has to be in there somewhere, I just couldn't see it, or is that just not put into the table?
Just to explain what I said around the changes to the plans that have now been approved, attachment 9 contains that information. Which is on
320, no.
Page 318.
Yep.
So all of the plans that council identified need to be amended and submitted back to council were submitted and were then endorsed. So within that table, item 10, which was
all right.
Condition 10, sorry.
But I thought these all went through then onto table 1.
That's what they're proposing. So they're proposing to take these plans that were endorsed by council with the changes that council required and put them into table 1.
Okay, I must have missed it then because I can't see the number 10, the shoreline landscaping. I'll check before the end of the meeting. I can't see that having gone through to table 1, that was all. I'll just check that one. I'm sure it has and I've just missed it. And the Wollum Froglet. On page 312, condition 24, I'm understanding that they changed the conservation land to be dedicated to council. It seems like a different lot number was put up. I'm just wondering if it's because the plan got changed or something, or if there was an actual report as to why. There's so much in here. Sorry, every time I read it, I find something else. So on page 312, condition 24.
Through the chair. So no changes are proposed to how and what is being dedicated. All that's been done is that the lot description is being updated to the current.
So it's the same lot, it's just a different description?
And the same extensive area.
Okay, because I couldn't find it on a plan to clarify that, thank you. And on page 313 on attachment 7 about the koala habitat, I was just turning the page actually that time, that hasn't been, now this was approved when we had SPRPs and now that's changed. Is there any weakening or reduction in any way of koala habitat by having that done?
Through the chair, none at all. The regulation translated the SPP into the planning regulation, so there's no.
Okay, so any protection that was in the initial plan for the, I think it was no juvenile koala food trees where they'd be cut down and everything, that's all still the same?
It's as per.
Okay, thank you.
At all, Councillor Barry? Thank you. Any speakers for? Comments? I think Councillor Bishop had his hand up first. Would you like to speak, Councillor Bishop?
Thank you very much. In a moment, I'd like to ask a question of the officer through the chair, but before I do, I'd just like to take up on the suggestion from Councillor Bloglari for us to spend a little bit more time getting into the understanding of the significance, because when this is relating to a minor change, and that definition of that is pursuant to Section 2 of the Pact of a minor change is for a development approval is a change that would not result in a substantially different development. That's across the board. I think we need to look at this particular development as a highly contentious development that was approved out of sequence with specific conditions in place in order to have a point in time understanding. We did not have, and we still don't have, an updated transport plan. There are significant potential impacts that if we apply the city plan as it is now, across this in an incremental manner through minor changes and allow that to move through time through a process of iterations and adjustments to become a bit like the rest of the city, we lose the original intention of those specific plans and conditions that were put in place. So my question therefore to officers is, what can we do to ensure that the original conditional assessments are retained in full? New information being updated is fine, but not adjusted in any way that would remove the original intent. Because I can understand that their consideration of this being a minor change, I think of the word minor as M-I-N-E-R. If there's a slight adjustment, they might be able to mine a new vein of currency and explore rich territory. I'd rather make sure that we stick with the original plan of development. I just want to make sure that we've got that absolutely watertight, and that we're not going to expose potential residents of the city to pay for things by applying new, looser terminologies.
Through the chair, I guess there's two things. One, we have an application before us, and we will have no doubt future applications before us that we have to assess on their merits. So we have to put the test of, is it a minor change, over this, and we've done that on page 113 and 14, and officers believe it does meet the minor change test. And there's not significantly substantially different development. Secondly, I guess in terms of the infrastructure, which I think is probably what you're getting at with the last part of that question, that's dealt with through an infrastructure agreement. So there's an infrastructure agreement that identifies the responsibilities of the applicant or the developer to bring on certain infrastructure, to pay certain infrastructure fees, charges. That's not being changed through this request, and neither can it be. That infrastructure agreement has to be changed through a decision of council to change that infrastructure agreement, and that's not before us today.
So if I may, through you, beyond infrastructure, are there any changes that could be moving us in a direction by allowing certain conditions to fall away because they've been met? Do we potentially open up new applications that previously wouldn't have been possible?
The changes in terms of amending the conditions to bring them in as approved plans has no effect.
And so the original plan of development and its rigour and scrutiny and limitations, is that retained in full?
Other than the changes that are being proposed through this minor change.
And that's why I'm asking the question, because they're the things I'd rather not remove from what's being proposed. Because if those things, as a minor, M-I-N-E-R, starts to look at options, if we've moved away from the original conditioned assessment, highly contentious, out-of-sequence development, my concern is that we potentially go down a path that could be problematic. I totally understand the developer's request and why they would ask. I can understand why officers are suggesting it's fair and reasonable, but as a representative for fellow citizens who will live there, and also those who will pay, not just for infrastructure, but quality of life, adjustment, all those sorts of things, I'm reluctant, and I would prefer that we actually spend more time getting right down to understanding that. And so a further question, is there any reason why taking time to do that would be a deemed refusal or be not manageable?
Through the chair, there's no deemed approval provisions for a minor change. It will just be an application that's sitting out of time if we don't decide to.
Are you finished, Councillor Bishop?
Yes, thank you.
Councillor Edwards, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Chris. That's good. I'm satisfied that there's a minor change that's mainly administrative. It's not the changes I'm concerned about, it's the outcomes, what those proposed changes are. And I actually don't have any problem with code assessment in order to deliver community facilities. If it's going to make it easier to have facilities delivered for the community, I think that's a good move. I do have a question around the school, though. And there's information that hasn't been presented to us as to why this has been proposed to have that outcome. And I'd like some assurance that this doesn't present a situation where the shoreline development could go towards completion without providing for a school if a school isn't delivered by the time it's needed. So I need some assurances that the footprint of a school remains intact until there is a case or a delivery of a school outside the shoreline area. Can you comment on that?
Through the chair. So page 314 identifies the existing and the proposed condition in relation to the delivery of the school. So in both cases, the timing, which is the right-hand column, identifies that prior to the lodgement of an application seeking approval for a subdivision plan that creates a 1,000th lot, so that's the threshold, 999 lots, once they look to lodge for the 1,000th lot, they must comply with this condition, which is either confirmation from the Department of Education and Training that a new state primary school to service the proposed shoreline community has been planned, or evidence that a non-state primary school to service the proposed shoreline community has the appropriate approvals to be delivered either within the subject site or within 1 kilometre of the shoreline boundary. So it's that extra part to that B that's being proposed to be added, but the timing remains the same as the original condition.
Oh, thank you. And the key word I was here to please to see is appropriate approvals, not so it has to be approved. So it's substance. So that's fine. I'd just also like to clarify in my mind too that when were the meeting conditions met? That's the mean they've done it. We're only removing them because they have been met. So it's not a dilution of the process. It's actually strengthening the process because the conditions that council applied to the development, the applicant is meeting.
Through Chair, that's correct. And I guess the other thing to note is that all of the previous approvals, that the conditions on that original approval are all publicly available there. Those decision notices can be sought by anyone and they'll show those original conditions.
Thank you. Councillor Hughes, do you have a comment?
Yes.
Question?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, and thank you, Mark, for the question, because I too am concerned about the school. Just drilling down and understanding that you've just answered Councillor Edwards' question. With the school on page, and I've just changed pages with what you were saying, it's number condition 28 with regarding to the school. So we talk about a state primary school and we talk about a non-state school, a private school as such. The wanting the flexibility, is that the flexibility for both or either or one or the other? Or I'm really concerned about the impact of the school. So for an example, the school could have been potentially on this lot or parcel of land proposed, and we know things move, and if that was in the footprint of the shoreline development, and then now we can say, well, we can move it a kilometre out. So when we move it, are we moving the state school, a private school, or whichever school you jolly well like? What are we doing there, please?
Through the chair. So at present, if we look at the original condition, it identified that either there's confirmation from the department, from the state, that a new state primary school will be delivered to service the proposed shoreline community. So that's not saying that it must be within the shoreline development area. It's saying that one option is the state is going to deliver a primary school that services shoreline. Now that's one option. The second option in the original condition was, if that's not the case, and the state doesn't deliver or doesn't propose to deliver a school to service the shoreline community, then there'll need to be a non-state primary school delivered on the shoreline site. So what the applicant is asking, therefore, is in relation to that second option, to say that, we think there could be somewhere within a slightly broader catchment where a school might be more appropriate. It may still go on the shoreline site, but they're proposing to have some additional flexibility considering the expansion of the urban footprint, which extends now beyond just the shoreline development area, to still be within 1 kilometre, which would still service the shoreline community.
Further, thank you, Deputy Mayor, further to that, within the shoreline development, the land is owned by the developers. So obviously a kilometre up the road is owned by whomever. In the development application, the originals, I would presume, there was allocation for a school on a parcel of land, somewhere in that development. So what this is saying to me is now that potential parcel of land, parcel Z, whatever it is, that was earmarked for a school could now be developed, so adding more to the yield, and we can put the school out over there, a kilometre up the road, and that's nothing to do with the shoreline development. They've just now got an extra parcel of land to develop potentially into a much higher yield, because the school is a large parcel of land, be it private or public, and now up the road we'll negotiate with Mr. Whoever to buy a bit of land, someone that may be developing a private school and or the state government. So by this condition 28, that could potentially free up a whole parcel of land or section of land for the developer to develop into more housing with no promised school. Is that correct? That's what I'm trying to understand, the implication of this. Thank you.
Through the chair, the original approval is a preliminary approval, so it sets up a plan of development, it sets up the levels of assessment and assessment criteria for future applications. It didn't allocate a particular site or area for a school, neither did it need to. So how that was dealt with by council was placing the condition on the approval to say by the 1,000th lot needs to deliver a school or have approval for a school, or that the state is going to provide a school to service that catchment. So that was the condition that was put in to provide surety for that. There's nowhere in the current approval that nominates a site for the school. So this is just to provide a bit more flexibility around the location of that school. It'll still be subject to negotiation between landowners, and you know, that will no doubt still happen. So the implication is that they wouldn't be able to develop more than 999 lots on the site. So that the condition provides that surety that if they want to go above the 1,000th lot, a school needs to be provided.
Okay, Councillor Hughes. Councillor Golay, thank you. Okay, Councillor Boglari.
Thank you. Through the chair to Chris. I remember sitting in the workshops way back then, whenever it was, 2014 or 15, and we talked about what parcel of land within the shoreline development would be best for the school. We talked about the main road going through, and we didn't want children doing...
Yep, you.
And we didn't want cycleways having to go over there for the children to get to the school. But at all times, the assumption was that the school would be within that shoreline area, and because we were planning the cycleways to get to the school, not going over the road, and how best to connect all those suburbs. So what Councillor Hughes is asking to me is how I've taken it as well, which is why I asked about the school before, that it was shoreline who's going to make sure they had a school and it was going to be within their actual development, and I really do think that was what the councillors thought at the time was going to happen. So this is that change, and they mightn't be able to at this stage get their 1,000th home, But by then, in a few years' time, they'll probably, you know, there could be another change just like this one, you know, that comes along, and we end up with all those families there without a school. So I do think it is a point that we did think it was on that block.
Through the chair, that's exactly what the original condition said. So that's why council imposed the condition to say, B, evidence that a non-state primary school has appropriate approvals to be delivered within the subject land. So that is the change that is being proposed. They're proposing to provide more flexibility to that location.
I would be perhaps saying that there could be a greater financial return that if between now and when the 999th lot is delivered, to have a school allocation outside within a kilometre of the footprint, that then gives me the opportunity to have greater density and yield, because that land that I would have allocated for within the shoreline precinct is now freed up. So I'm happy with everything, but I've still got questions around the school.
Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, just a quick question through you to Chris. The 1,000 lots before they go ahead and build a school, is that a regulatory requirement? Because that, if I sort of think about it from a common sense aspect, you've got 1,000 lots, that means potentially 1,000 kids. That could potentially mean 1,000 cars extra on the road coming either way before a school is built, because there is no public transport or anything out there either. So is there a way to condition it so that it's the 500th lot that they start building the school?
So there's no change to that timing. That timing was approved as part of the original approval.
Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, what a great discussion.
I'll let Councillor Mitchell speak first. I'll come back to you, Councillor Bagar.
Still on the school point, I'll accept it, sir.
Okay, Councillor Bagar.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. I just want to check. I thought a developer can come back and ask us for changes. We can't ask the developer changes. But if a developer opens up a certain condition, that then opens up council's ability to request further information or a change to it. I know we can't ask for a change on something, but since they have asked for a change on the school, when negotiating that change, doesn't that open it up then that council can come back and also ask for the change that we'd like to see, so we might be able to ask for it to go back to 500?
Through the chair, only if it's relevant to the change.
Therefore, I believe it is relevant to the change, so therefore we could ask.
Through the chair, my advice is that no, you couldn't. It's not, wouldn't be relevant to the change. They're seeking to provide flexibility around the location. They're not seeking to change the threshold or the number of lots associated with provision of that school.
But by changing the location, it's possibly going to be now further away from the actual residence it was meant to service. So therefore, by asking for it to be less, to be established before less people move in, helps with that traffic and everything, which is what was previously suggested, because it could be further away. So you could make it relevant if you wanted to make it relevant. And is that a doable?
Be a decision for council. Decision for council.
Yes. But councillors could discuss that point and it could happen.
Hey, Mr. Chair, the officer has clearly stated their position, and it was not...
Councillor Telfy, but this is a very important development in our city. I want as many questions answered as possible.
So I'm just saying, therefore, councillor. Questions about three speakers ago, but was ignored, and the same people have been speaking over and above.
You've already spoken. You'll come back and come up.
Has councillor Borglari and the other councillors?
I was just trying to seek greater clarification on councillor Golly's point when he asked, could the condition be changed from 1,000 to 500? Because I believed it could, and I think now we know that that is open for discussion. Perhaps when it's Councillor Golly's turn again, he might like to talk about
that again, because that is not what the officer said.
Well, I think it was quite clear what the officer said. Councillor Mitchell, you can continue now.
Thank you. Yes, and I'm sure we'll get back to the school, because it was certainly on my mind too. Again, what a great discussion. It's so important, and decision made by previous councillor Shoreline, of course. And appreciate it is a very important matter, the implications of which need to be really clearly understood, both positive and negative. So again, thanks to councillors for being so clear with your questions today. It's great, and the officers for their clear answers. I'll go over, I'm sure I'll re-prosecute some ground here, but it's important for me to have the say as well. Also, don't want any risk of bracket creep of any decisions that are made that might open for any negative impacts, but I'm also very keen to see opportunities for positive impacts be fully assessed and allowed through when they are a benefit to the community. Some of the things have come up today, very important matters around density. We've been told there's no effect on that assessment, no change. The appropriate oversights remain in place, that's great. Community facility, that's positive. We're making it easier for community facilities to come forward, so that can only be a good thing. Infrastructure and fees are intact, that agreement's unchanged, that's great. From all this excellent discussion, the intent does seem to be still intact, the intent of the original agreement, so that's important. Some of the changes are administrative, not a problem. The conditions that have been changed are because they've already met council's request, so that's terrific. That's what we've been told, so the conditions have been changed, so that's the officer's advice, and that was very clear. So the school obviously is still there, and initially, as I was sitting there thinking, oh great, well the flexibility of positioning increases the chances of the school being delivered earlier. That was my first thought. But very importantly, I really want it to be in the best position. And I'm certain that officers are going to be keeping a very close eye on that. Whether there's an opportunity to strengthen that somehow, that's fine. But the very best position for the school, for the safety and amenity of the children and the parents travelling to it, obviously a very important thing. But overall, some great questions, some very clear answers, and at the moment I'm pretty comfortable with what's come before us.
Councillor Telfy, since you said that I didn't answer you before, you may have questions now.
Thank you. Just to clarify the education aspect of it, Chris, the right-hand column says, prior to the lodgement of an application seeking approval for subdivision plan that creates 1,000th lot, which is not a change, that's in the original. And confirmation that the only change here is the positioning of the school. I don't have a problem with that because I believe that it gives us more flexibility to find the best place. My concern is that, and I'm not a lawyer, Andrew can have a look at the conditions for us, it simply says in this, we've always been led to believe that the school will be provided by the 1,000th lot. But in actually reading the conditions, all that is required, and we can't force the education department to put in a school, that's why we've got the second proposal that a private school be provided if Education Queensland doesn't step up. But it simply says confirmation from department that it's planned. Now, there can be plans without construction for decades, so I'm a little bit concerned about that, but it's not something we're actually changing today. And in the same vein, evidence that there is an appropriate approval for a private school in place, but they don't actually have to build it by the 1,000th lot. Now, is there anywhere else in here that, because we were under the belief that, that there would be a school, and I'm sure it's to the benefit of the people building the development that they need to be able to reassure their purchasers that there will be a school. But at what point do we get to... There's nothing actually confirming in here that a school will be built at any particular time frame. So, and I believe the answer, as you said before, is that we can only make changes relative to changes requested. But do we have the option to say, you know, that they have to provide this evidence by the 1,000th lot, but it actually has to be constructed with pupils in it by the 1,500th lot or anything like that?
Through the chair, you're right. It's not part of the change or relevant to the change. The original condition did only require evidence that the appropriate approvals are in place, not that it be delivered.
Okay, I've got Councillor Edwards, then Councillor Gleeson.
Mr. Chair, I get the feeling that the condition 28 is a concern to a lot of councils until we get some clarity on it. And I was just suggesting to other councils, but so we don't hold this up, is that we proceed with the officer's recommendation but exclude condition 28 so that we can have further discussion on it and perhaps any other matters, and then we can come back more fully informed. So it's not a position of saying no, but to allow us to have further discussion.
Mr. Chair, could we ask the planners if that's within our power to do that? And if it is that something that could be negotiated in the month after? Is that something that we can ask the officers to negotiate with the applicants with regard to the approval within the appeal period?
Through the chair, definitely within council's power to identify that that additional point to exclude condition 28 from the change. There could also be an additional point to the resolution that council officers negotiated with the applicant on that point. It wouldn't be something that could be resolved through an appeal period or change to this. There's no negotiated decision process for a change application, as there is for a new application. But it could be something that we can negotiate with the applicant and they could lodge as part of another change. Or they do currently have an other change application in with council that could be incorporated into that, if they agree.
Thank you. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Chair. I don't like the idea of moving the school out of the area. We set a boundary and we said, yeah, okay, this is okay within this boundary, and the school should remain in that. I don't want to see someone to go out and purchase 100 acres and throw a school on the main road and force 400 families out on to the main road every day. The school should be within the boundary of the shoreline area. What we'll also do is if we allow the school to go outside of the zoned area, you'll have a catchment area on one side. And ideally, a school should have a catchment area that encapsulates 360 degrees, not just 180. So all that's going to do is going to put pressure on the other side of the school to then be developed, and we'll just see a flow-on effect from that. I want to see the school situated within the area that we've agreed to, and I don't care if it's within 1 kilometre or 10 kilometres. I don't want to see it outside the area that's marked.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a process question? If we want to put that amendment in, is that something I can move as the original mover, or do I have to get someone else to move it?
You can move it.
Well, then I would just change that and ask councillors to consider an amended motion.
Well, let's go through the questions first. We'll have Councillor Volley first.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I still just fall back to my previous question and statement, which is from a common sense approach, understanding that there will be no public transport out there. We've basically conditioned it so that they will build a school on the 1,000th lot. I just think it's too much. That's a lot of families marking time, moving through the Redlands looking for a school to attend, not to mention the traffic on the road on Cleveland Redland Bay Road, etc.
I think that number needs to be dropped.
Well, that's already been asked and answered. I think the officer's already answered that question, so let's move on to the next.
Well, is there scope to drop it or not?
No. And could I just clarify also that registering the 1,000 slots doesn't mean there's 1,000 houses there. It just refers to the land plan.
Yeah, so if I just look at other areas, though, where it's being staged, there's construction still going on in Stage 2 or half of Stage 1. There's already people living in Stage 1 in completed product. Where are those kids going to school? I could see this happening here. You're going to have stages partly completed with people who've already purchased and moved in and looking for a school.
Councillor Elliott asked, we've answered before, Councillor Glass. Councillor Elliott? Chris answered that question before, Councillor. You can answer it again if you like, Councillor. Chris, sorry.
Through the Chair. The matter was assessed and decided as part of the original approval and identified the 1,000 slot. They're not proposing to change that timing as part of the change.
Councillor Elliott was... I'm going to go to Councillor Elliott because there's not a chance yet. Councillor McGlory, thank you. Councillor Elliott?
While we're talking about the school, I didn't raise it yesterday, but the actual... You can have a school, but what is the size of the school in excess? You know, like, you can say a school. The school can be on the first floor of commercial premises. I'm sort of wondering if we're going to do it... I'm supporting Councillor Felty on the amendment, but certainly... Can we discuss the size? Because is it?
I thought from memory it was a CP7 zone or some CP zone in that for the school. I assumed. Thought. Might be much the original Fox and Bell ones. I thought. Chris, would you like to comment on that?
Through the chair. Just reading the condition. It does say that. It must be demonstrated to service the proposed shoreline community. So it doesn't identify a size, but they have to provide the evidence that it will service that community. So that will dictate the size.
Right. Okay. Happy with that?
Now, Councillor Glowry.
Thank you. Two points. Just going back to the school. When the officer spoke before, I understood it that yes, it was set at 1,000 originally. Yes, the officers haven't asked for it to be changed, but because it has been opened up for a change by the applicant, you said councillors could discuss it and change the amount if we wished. I actually haven't found that in my 10 years.
Councillors, please let Chris answer the question.
But because it's been opened up, we can, because I thought that was the understanding. If they open up a condition, we can also ask for changes while it's being discussed.
Andrew, could you answer that, please?
Thank you, Chair. Just to assist, I believe Chris rightly said that council is bound by the Planning Act to impose reasonable and relevant conditions, so we'd need to source any change to the recommendation from the officers. It has to be reasonable and relevant to the proposed application. So, to clarify, we can't do anything and we can only assess the application before us. Can we reduce the threshold from 1,000 to 500? It's a tough question without being able to source some science behind the 1,000 to begin with. So all I can say is that council can impose reasonable relevant conditions on the application. I believe that's what Chris
because
said.
It's been opened up. Because, now, because the condition has been asked for a change.
Yes, and if we change the threshold, all I can put council on notice is it's difficult to change the threshold without knowing with certainty the science behind it. So it's open for council if it chooses to change the threshold from 1,000 to 500, but I can't answer whether that's based on any science on the floor right now.
But there's the opportunity for us to ask.
Yes.
There's opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's what we were just asking. My other question was yesterday, there is a change in here to the dams, and yesterday Councillor Golay actually had extra information that I hadn't been aware of until he mentioned it to me, and I'd just like that discussed if
case that is relevant to the change they want to do with the dams. If Councillor Golay.
I understand the application wants to retain the dam, which is correct. And
that dam that Councillor Golay mentioned yesterday that could have some heritage significance, therefore will be safe.
So the change is to retain that one, or to provide the flexibility to assess that dam. So at present the condition requires removal of all dams, and it's to change the condition to say for this dam, we'll provide further. We have the opportunity to provide further information to seek to retain that dam, and that'll be assessed at the appropriate point in time. We're not aware of any heritage value to that dam, but. They would need to demonstrate that it's structurally sound, it's not going to be a high maintenance burden on council, etc. So that would be done at a future stage.
No further comments or questions. Let's go back to Councillor Talty to...
Can I move an amendment to the motion, please, Mr Chair? Just simply adding the officer's recommendation to approve as recommended by the officers, with the exception of point 28. Is that acceptable, Chris, under how we could do it? Yep.
Apparently someone else has to move that amended motion.
Oh, okay.
Councillor Hughes? Okay, Councillor, you need to give me an alternative motion.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor and CEO. Happy and delighted to do that. The officer's recommendation, as is on the screen, with the amendment to condition 28 excluded or removed at this point. Yeah. That.
Well, we can clarify, we're not removing it altogether, just disallowing that change.
Yes. With the exception of condition 28. Thank you. Council resolves
to change the wording right on this.
To the condition provided in attachment 7, with the exception of condition 28. If that will be feasible.
I think we've got a motion now, if you can hold on a little longer. Thank you.
I didn't think you were able to do it. I thought I said yes. And they said yes, and then they come back and said no. Oh, you can come up. Because I didn't think we could ask this yesterday in our afternoon, in our conversation. No, we're not.
Councillor Hughes, could you please read your new motion that's been typed up, and we'll need a seconder for that motion.
provided in attachment, freezing the proposed change to condition number 28. Or if, yes. Okay, if that'll stand up.
Refusing it? Yes.
Is that strong enough? Refusing, as in we've refused it, but from a legal perspective, Andrew, that word refusing is strong enough, not excluding, because I would have chuck it out altogether. Okay, thank you. Then I'm happy with that. Thank you. I appreciate that, Andrew. Thanks.
Yes, Councillor. I guess that would be up to the applicant.
I can answer that. What this reads then, councillors, is that the minor change application will be approved subject to there's no change to any condition 28 regarding the school. Can council unilaterally go back to the applicant to talk about the school in condition 28? From an officer level, they can have conversations, but we can't unilaterally or ourselves change that condition without a change application. So it's off the table.
Another
Okay, I need a second of this motion. Move it. Councillor Edwards, all in favour? This is for the new motion. You're all in favour of this new motion? We're just voting on the amendment first, so... Okay, so voting on the amendment, not the actual... Okay, so those in favour, Councillor Blurry, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Gollay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Pelty, those against, Councillor Gleeson and Councillor Bishop. Motion is carried, and Councillor Ulick is for as well. So. That is now the motion, and now we'll be voting on that motion. Now Councillor Hughes. Your motion, Councillor Hughes, so you want to speak to it? Now, sorry. Just wait till we... Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor and Councillors. Thank you for the support and the conversation. It is important to myself, as Councillor Gleeson has just said, we want to ensure that residents living in Shoreline Estate have a school available to them in a 360, not a 180. We don't want to see division. We don't want to see separation. We realise that this is a large site, and then proposing a potential kilometre somewhere else, we don't support that at all. In refusing this proposed change to condition 28, I think strengthens the community's livability within the Shoreline development. Thank you.
Speakers against? Councillor Bishop? We're speaking to the amended motion. The whole new motion.
It's because it changed.
Are you speaking against, Councillor Bishop?
Yes, I am. The reason I'm speaking against is to just... I would like to ask councillors to consider, if this doesn't get up, actually regardless, I'd like to consider an option that we do let this lie on the table. I do think that there are potentially other issues that this one change is welcome because it sticks with the original plan. My broader concern is that there are other proposed adjustments that could potentially expose exactly the same, but similar situations for other impacts to affect our city. So I would rather not move away from those original plan of development approvals as they were, which is what's still proposed if we proceed with this option. So I would like to ask councillors to take the time. We're not going to be in any critical time constraint parameters that are going to cause major impacts. I do think that we should think more broadly about this highly contentious development and think through some of these other potential impacts for the citizens of our city, current and the 10,000, possibly more, as they start to look at other options around the area that are going to happen here.
Speaker 4, Councillor Edwards.
Thank you. I think this satisfies me that to remove that provision. We're always going to get these things come before us because that's the process, and as I said before, it's the outcomes I'm concerned about, not the fact that they're bringing things to us. What I'd like to be seeking is that these issues or proposed changes come to us in with more time to discuss before a general meeting, then we can resolve a lot of these issues instead of doing it on the fly around here. But I'm happy for this to go through. I'm satisfied with the condition 28 coming out, and I understand we will get these coming time and time again, and the next council will get them time and time again. It's the outcomes that are important, but if we've had more time before it comes to a general meeting, it gives us that time to discuss more fully.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any speakers against? Comments? Councillor Kelty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been made quite clear by officers that these changes are largely administrative changes to reflect changes in planning regulation and the scheme. councillors have spoken to the idea that this is moving away from the original approval, when actually it is a process carrying forward the original approval, where we've put conditions on the applicant and said you can have it a preliminary approval provided you do X, Y and Z. So they have done X, Y and Z, and now people are objecting to the changes related to the conditions that we put on them, which is a little bit difficult to understand. The changes that allow for code assessment, which affect the town centre and community facilities, I think are good changes. They make things function better, and we still have the ability to call those up if we're not happy with it, so I'm happy with that. I'm happy to have some flexibility within the positioning of the school, but the other concerns over the school and the possibility that we might be able to negotiate a stronger wording for the school in return for that, I think is a good outcome. So we can talk, you know, further about that with this amended motion. I don't believe that this adjusts or in any way removes the original intent, as has been suggested, and I think that reflecting the changes that were required by council is what we expect of the developer. So, you know, we need to participate in that process too. So I think overall we've come to a good outcome with this, to go back and discuss the school further and let the other minor changes go through. Thank you.
Councillor Gleeson, did you have a question?
Just wanted to clarify for the gallery, maybe Chair. So we've removed condition 28, which means the school has to remain within the boundaries of the shoreline development. The original condition of the school being put in, that was either a private school or a public state school, or both, which they're probably not going to go both, but the area of size, but it was either or, isn't it? If they can get state government on board to build a school, great. Otherwise, they've got to provide a private state school.
I think the issue is, as everyone knows, we're subordinate to the state government, so if they decide to put a school outside, they'll put it outside without. So that's a question we haven't, that's a consideration we haven't considered, so. Any more comments or questions, or Councillor Gollo?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I still revert back to my original statement, the common sense approach. I don't believe this development should be moving forward at all, based on the fact that there is no infrastructure to support it. We're actually proposing.
Councillor Gollo, we've already had that debate years ago.
I understand that. Well, but it's not. I also make note of the fact that. You know, again,
Councillor Gollo, could you please?
Councillor Gollo re-prosecuting the same conversation that was already stated?
Yeah. It was a decision of Councillor Gollo before your time, so you're re-prosecuting stuff that's already been decided. So, look, Councillor Talty, Councillor Hughes, sorry.
Thanks for that, Beatrice.
I think we were re-prosecuting the same question.
Yeah, no, I wondered whether he had other points to make.
Did you have other points, Councillor Bell?
Just a question.
Yeah. Councillor Hughes, could you please wrap it up, please?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to put the motion. We've wrapped.
Okay, Councillors, have put the motion. Those in favour? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Telty, Councillor Gleeson. Those against? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Gollay, Councillor Bishop and Councillor Hewlett. Thank you. Motion is carried. Okay, we move on to item, we don't have reports from infrastructure, we move on to item 15, which is the Merrill Minute. And I've been asked to present this on behalf of the Mayor. The Deputy, no, I don't think you have a Deputy Merrill.
You all should have a copy of this Merrill Minute. I'm sure you've all seen it. It's up there on there. Do you need me to read it to you, or are you familiar with it? Yes. I shall read the opening paragraph for you, councillors. In accordance with S22 Policy 3127 Council Meeting Standing Orders at the General Meeting scheduled on Wednesday 6th March, I propose to ask Deputy Minister Councillor Lance Hewlett to move the following on my behalf. The Council resolves to call in the State Government to immediately release to the community the proposed bill on the intended changes to Local Government Legislation, Local Government Act and Local Government Electoral Act, including the recommendation for compulsory preferential voting at the next local government election. When the Premier of Queensland, the Honourable Anastasia Palaszczuk MP and Minister for Local Government, Racing and Multicultural Affairs, the Honourable Stirling Hinchcliffe, to express its opposition to this bill being tabled in State Parliament without any consultation with the community or directly with individual councils. 3, call in the State Government to delay the tabling of any bill proposed changes to the Local Government Act, Local Government Electoral Act, until they have genuinely engaged with the community, including undertaking a community education program that clearly explains what the proposed changes mean to the community. 4, write to the Local Government Association of Queensland in support of their calls for greater transparency from the State Government to the Queensland community with respect to proposed changes to the Local Government Act and the Local Government Electoral Act. So take that all in. So I'll take some comments. Anyone wish to make a comment? Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I downloaded this last night. Well, it was printed out last night. I don't think it's not a big deal. I'm sort of, the public, or this will be a bit like our annual report, will be read thoroughly by about 5 people. I'm sort of, there's nothing to be afraid of in here. Most of this stuff we're going. I'd really like to thank the Ipswich Council for falling on its sword, which brings all these recommendations into play. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Wright. Any other further comments? Councillor Talty?
I'm very happy to support this Merrill Minute, Mr. Chair. The idea that we can change the fundamental foundation of how people vote without telling them the changes beforehand, and then go into an election to try to experiment with our democracy and see how it goes. Now, my understanding is that there are changes in this legislation that against recommendations that came out of the Fitzgerald inquiry. I don't know if that's correct, and I haven't been educated enough on it to know. I would like to know, and then I would like the opportunity to write to my state member in an informed way before he votes to bring that in for our election. So I support this Merrill Minute. They should be telling us all, both local government and the community, what changes they're proposing and exactly what the impact of those changes will be for the electors.
Thank you, Councillor Talty. Councillor Golo. I think that was good. That is setting, Chair.
Oh, right. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said so far. I don't recall anything with Operation Belcara coming out saying they had to change the way elections were run for local government. In fact, we sat here with the Electoral Commission, who said that they're going to try to monitor and stamp out teams, etc., in local government. And in my opinion, this is actually going to take away the local out of local government. This is basically going to see parties influence the outcomes of elections, local government elections, more so to the point where you'll end up having very clear and party-driven voting blocks in local government outside of Brisbane and the Gold Coast. I think it just does away with what we're supposed to be here for. We're supposed to be independent advocates who are there to help the community work through the complexities of local government. That's it. We're not there to wear blue, red, green and jump up and down and carry on. We've already had through state elections where it's very easy to basically run through and do your various preferences, which have drastically impacted outcomes here locally, in my opinion. And I don't want to see that happen here in local government. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. I think Councillor Mitchell was next. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Yeah, I'll be supporting the Merrill Minute. There's no doubt that there's been some reforms that are necessary, and no one's going to argue that. That's great. We all need to be on their best behaviour and be seen to be that. But this, to me, is just way too much coming through too soon. It's a bit of a Trojan horse where there's a whole suite of changes coming through without the time to look at the detail. Love Councillor Golly's line, taking the local out of local government. I'm suspicious of some of the reasons behind one or two of the recommendations. So I'll be supporting this. I think we need a lot more time to have a look, and the community need to look. But the intent of reform and transparency in government, absolutely support it.
Thank you, Mitchell. Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, wholeheartedly support the Mayor's Merrill Minute. Nowhere in the Belcarra report did it recommend implementing a mandatory preferential voting system in local government. It just did not happen. And I'm opposed to it, and I'll go one step further. Post-reform, one of the new changes I want to bring in under prohibited campaigning techniques is that only political parties and registered groups of candidates will be able to undertake campaigning techniques. So not unlike the VLAD laws, if you've got a couple of councillors that get along well together, you can't even campaign together unless you declare yourself as a registered political party. That's a joke. Absolute joke. Where's the independence in local governments? This minister's trying to remove that and trying to plant his Labor members through our council. It's disgusting.
Councillor Bishop.
Point of order.
Councillor Mitchell.
Not going through the chair talking over the top of each other, thanks. Yeah.
Councillor Gleeson, please keep those kind of remarks outside the office, please. Councillor Bishop.
Thank you.
Mine's different.
Sorry, Councillor Elliott, sorry.
Yeah, I'd like Councillor...
That's really not a point of order, Councillor Elliott. Thank you. Councillor, let's go to Councillor Bishop.
He was an LNP candidate.
Let's keep it civil, councillors. Councillor Bishop.
Thank you.
Councillor Bishop has the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am, like all of us, a very proud representative of my community. I don't represent any particular team. I don't like political parties. I think they skew the entire process of representation. It's the modern reality. I find the Merrill Minute concerning to me, because where we've gone over the last decade, not just in Queensland, and I'm certainly not just referring to Redland City, is into a direction where the empowerment and support for elected representatives has reached further than ever before. And in Queensland, one of the most concerning and alarming things that came about in the 2012 SPOLA report, Sustainable Planning and Other Legislative Amendments, was the bestowal to mayors across Queensland the power not only to direct CEOs but all executive officers. That's a significant power. This report looks to address that. As a representative of citizens, I think it's critical, on page 22 of 24 from what is proposed.
Excuse me, point of order, Mr. Chair. We're talking to the matter before us is whether we send this letter. That's the Merrill Minute. We're not talking to the legislation.
It's relevant because he's discussing what this Merrill Minute may create.
Specifically?
It's specific to
the report we've been given by the local government minister. Which refers to the local minister's.
Please continue, Councillor.
Thank you. And so that concern to me of elected representatives being able to reach further into organisations across Queensland is a concern in terms of the separation of powers. The Belcarra report has come about because of a series of consequential fallout across the political diaspora of Queensland, partly to do with those extra powers. I'm not saying anything about the individuals involved, but the bestowal of that power is a concern because it changes the balance of the democratic individual member representation, and it gives extra power to to certain representatives. I'm all for the proceeding with Belcara report. I don't think these people have just knee-jerk come up with a bit of stuff that they've shoved down on a piece of paper and released something willy-nilly. I think they are looking to try to take the politics out of representation, to take the power out of representatives where it's not appropriate, and put the power back into the hands of citizens and to enable elected representatives to work with their peers as equals, with no one particular person having extra powers, unless the collective bestow unto the mayor a particular power to direct officers. And then what is proposed now, mayors used to have the power to direct the chief executive officer and senior executive staff. What's proposed is the power of direction under senior executive staff rests with the chief executive officer rather than elected officials. That's a very important power, and it puts the collective collegiate peer response of us as representatives for our citizens back in the box seat, which is what I think is critical. It reinstates the separation of powers, and to me, this mayoral minute potentially is seen to interfere with that. And I think we should step back from that. I want to make sure that we have representatives who are doing the best interests for the long-term best outcomes of residents, and I would rather take the politics out wherever we can. And my concern is that if we try to interfere with this, we're getting in the way of the state's right to manage the way democracy unfolds in this city, in this state.
Thank you, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Glowry.
Thank you. I've already written to Stirling Hinchcliffe this morning and thanked him, because I think these ongoing reforms are very much in need, and I've written to him several times over the last couple of years supporting him and with my own opinion on various points. This is more than just the election. I too read it last night, and I did a couple of Facebook posts late at night with the exciting things as I found them. I don't agree with all of it. The preferential voting, I find, is open to groups targeting councillors. If they have four or five people running against you and they all, John Brent, ex-mayor of Beaudesert's a good example of that. Someone beat him and they only got 14% all up, but he had enough people that all preferenced the other fellow. And yet John was actually the majority winner. So I don't agree with preferential voting, so I'm not saying I agree with everything in here, but I do like the fact that they've capped spending, proposed to cap spending on elections. I think it's 10,000 for a division my size. It's proposed, that's what I'm saying, which is great. If you're an independent candidate and you have to save 10,000 to 15,000 every 4 years, rather than putting it off your housing loan, you've got to put it into an account for your campaign. Well, I only have to save 10,000 now, and those running against me can't come at me with a $30,000 or $40,000 campaign because they take donations. So there is a lot of good that is in this one, to do with the election, and other issues that we will no doubt write submissions on as well. The mayoral powers is also in here, which I think wholeheartedly agree with Councillor Bishop on that, and I think some councils and the predicaments they've got into, that might not have happened if that was never given by one of the lasting legacies of Campbell Newman's day. So I'm glad that that's been changed as well. That's another thing I've been writing to the Minister about, so I'm glad about all of that. I've also written and I've asked why there is a change, because if an officer can explain to me, previously when we've had bills, they go out to public consultation, the public can write submissions, but the difference with this one is they've only included stakeholders, and the community that they have done consultation with is only particular community groups, I believe. Is that what this is about? We're saying, why are they only going out to some stakeholders, some community groups, rather than the usual bill process?
The minute certainly wants broader community consultation.
Which is what it usually is. So that's why I'll be supporting this. But I'm interested to actually, what my email this morning was. It's just a question, a comment. As I wanted to have clarity, is that what we're asking for? Because it seems to be a different process to what we've had previously.
Definitely in the minute, Councillor McGlurry.
Previously, I was trying to explain what the difference was. Thank you. But I'm interested to know why. And I, you know, talking about politics, our local government association hasn't got clean hands on that one either. And I'm tired of being drawn into.
Chair, I don't know that we. I'm
tired of being
withdrawn.
Unless it's a point of order.
I think you can sum it up.
It's not relevant to the matter before.
Well, I'm just saying I'm going to support this, but I am supporting all that the minister is doing with his reforms, and I think we've got to be careful while we are working through this, do we actually stick to the actual points and we all don't become political as well involved in it.
Thank you, Councillor Murray. Councillor Edwards.
No, thank you, Chair. Yes, when I read what the minister's proposing, you know, I'm probably just about fully supportive of just about everything in there, and I think it's good. But there's two issues I have a concern about. One is that local government's the closest to the people, and I feel there should be some community discussion around that, so there's understanding. And there's even for myself, I don't have real clarity around the intent, which seems to be pushing people into being blocks or party driven. And then that raises other questions. If you're part of a party and one of your party has got a conflict of interest, does that mean all of you have got a conflict of interest and things like that? I think one of the strengths of local government, particularly small local governments, is the fact that anybody of any political suasion and independence can have a chance to go in and have a shot and try and make a difference. And that's one of the best things about local government, is it gives everybody the opportunity to get involved in the decision-making process. So I have concerns about that. So that's why I want to support this mayoral minute, because if the state government can do some consultation with the community, everyone gets an understanding, a bit of clarity around that. And if that's what the community wants to drive us that way, happy, or they might want to keep our independence. So that's why I'll be supporting the mayoral minute.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Is there any further comment? Councillor Hugh.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just understanding the first line here, call on state government to immediately release to the community the proposed bill. That's the, and it says the proposed bill, but what we're seeing, I understand, is cherry-picked or pieces of the bill, but not, we haven't actually seen the whole bill. So on this first part of the mayoral minute support, but nowhere here, it was my understanding that this is this mayoral minute has its genesis in the LDAQ writing to us asking for support. Should that be mentioned as such? This is.
It's number four, Councillor Hugh.
That says right to the local government in support. Yeah. Of their calls.
In support of their calls. Yes.
Yeah. So because that's what I wanted to say. We are supporting local government. Yeah. The LGAQ have a campaign here looking towards having the whole bill presented to the community. So thank you, CEO, for pointing those words out, their calls. I was looking for that. Thank you. I support.
Thank you, Kate. It looks like we've had all comments and discussion. I'm going to put the motion. Those in favour? Councillor Baglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Telty, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Hewlett, those against, Councillor Elliott and Councillor Bishop. Thank you. Mayor motion is carried. Well, the mayor minute is carried, to be safe. Next we have, I have no notices to repeal or amend resolution, so we go on to notice of motion. I believe you have one, Councillor Edwards. I think we all got a copy of that, yeah. Yeah. Have a second of that motion. Councillor Golay, would like to speak to it further, Councillor Bishop?
Many years ago, the council,
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. That figures against, or just comments? Paul, Councillor Bishop was first. Thank you, Councillor Bishop.
Thank you very much. I note this morning's speaker, the second speaker, referred to information on the web, which I had a look for, and the first page that comes up that refers to it, she's correct. It says 6:30 till 6:30, and then you go to a council site, and it actually clarifies the actual operating hours, which were different to the first Facebook page. I think that points to the bigger principle, and I agree with Councillor Edwards, that councils have traditionally managed swimming pools. It's a council piece of infrastructure, and the community does look to us as the appropriate decision maker and designer about how we're going to deliver these things. I think the previous intention to go into what could have been a public-private partnership, it was really between two government departments, was to try and spread the cost and deliver something to the community. I think what we're seeing at the moment is a bit of a failure there. My concern, if we don't design and actually actively involve council as the designers in what the outcome will be, I think this is where we need officers to think broadly about what comes back to us. If we look at the two options, really, you've got a commercial option, getting a commercial entity to run it, or a non-profit option, which is to get a community group to run it. I don't know that either of those are going to cut it. I think the number and volume of people on the island, commercially, would mean that we would probably find something failing, and it will ultimately cost council and the community, and possibly interfere with the state government's educational responsibilities. So the commercial option is challenged and potentially compromised. The non-profit option is to get the community to do it. Gee, that's got all sorts of hooks around it and really challenging issues to do with how do they manage that. I would like to use this as an opportunity for us as a council to look through the lens of what something like a cooperative option might look like. So if the members of the island took up membership in this facility and designed a cooperative
solution that could be of value, that might be a subscription-based thing, which is effectively what the fee was originally, but it was done by proxy. If we actually bring that front and centre into our design processing as officers and think, what might a mutual or a worker-owned entity managing that facility outside the school's hours look like? I really think that this is a moment for us to consider a local procurement management model that delivers the infrastructure in a way that actually will not be ultimately an impost on ratepayers across the city, but tries to contain it to the islands and be a benefit to the city. And I think in doing that, we could come up with an option and a model that is at world's best practice, which is where we want to be. And I think Redlands has a proud history of doing great collaboration with community. But I think there are some design tools now with co-ops and mutuals and so forth that are being legislated, where new legislation is being crafted. And in fact, I'll return now to what Councillor Hughes was talking about. The going local process does really open up the opportunity for citizens to participate in the collective design, the participatory budgeting, the to be actually volunteering or being paid to turn up and deliver the services. Anyway, just thought I'd raise that and certainly encourage officers to look at that as a third option, somewhere between the non-profit and the commercial, mutuals and co-ops.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Bagari.
Oh, thank you. There was a couple of speakers this morning which showed a level of frustration surrounding the pool, and I can remember those level of frustrations years ago when we sat here, you know, and we talked about ongoing, you know, with the pool. And I wish I had maybe Barbara Townsend, the councillor for the time at the moment, to help me with my memory. But I can remember there was community consultation at that time, and when the pool initially went in, I think from memory, it was discussed there was a $400,000 residential levy, $100,000 from the state, and $500,000 was put in by council at that time to give them that service. And then ongoing, Redland City Council every year has paid for operational costs, which apparently now are $200,000 a year. So, you know, we haven't deserted. I felt like the residents this morning felt like we'd been mistreating them or something, which we certainly haven't done. We've been supporting them, you know, the entire process. I have not heard at any stage from Simbi residents that they haven't been able to get into the pool or anything, and I'm disappointed and frustrated as a councillor that this hadn't been addressed until it got to this point of level of anxiety, you know, within our community, which, you know, at the time we gave it to the Department of Education, I think because we couldn't find a community group that actually wanted to take it on. I think the PNC might have even been asked if they wanted it. So, you know, we needed to perhaps hear about this earlier and maybe not get this anxiety in the community. But going forward now, I'm sure Councillor Edwards, sorry, I nearly called you Councillor Townsend, Councillor Edwards has got our support, but I'd just like to ask his permission to add in that Council resolves to engage with the Simbi community and the Department of Education, because before we go into the memorandum of understanding with them, because I want them to hear from the community, which obviously are the ones that has been impacted. Yeah, but we've got entering into engagement with the Simbi community about their needs for the future use prior to entering into the memorandum. I'd like the Education Department to be involved with that community consultation, not just council officers, because otherwise, once again, council is becoming the beat-up person, and the Department of Education is also involved there. So, but we could, well, invite. Yeah. Okay. Yep, I agree we've got to do the consultation, but can we at least invite someone from the Department of Education to sit down with us to understand and listen to the community?
Yeah,
maybe it doesn't need to be in the motion then. Maybe it just needs to be a verbal thing that they'll also be asked to come to the table.
Yeah.
Okay, thank
you. Councillor Telty?
Oh Lord, it took so long I forgot. I'm very happy to support this, and I would like to see the pool open longer hours for the community. I'm a little bit concerned. It was more of a question than a comment. If the agreement expires in April 2020 to the officers, through you, Mr. Chair, and council is presumably going to election sometime in March 2020, so the new council may or may not be sworn in by the 19th of April. I wouldn't like to see, with council suspended for 6 weeks prior to election and then possibly not sworn in by that date, that gives us quite a long, 10 weeks or so, possibly not having a council. I wouldn't like to see business as usual roll this agreement over while there was no one kind of watching. Is there some way we can ensure that this doesn't happen, that whoever the new councillor is, and I hope it'll be Councillor Edwards continuing on, gets an opportunity to participate and involve the community in this decision to re-sign the pool agreement?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, I would anticipate that any new MOU is agreed before it expires and before the March elections.
Yeah.
So I don't think those will intersect, and if they did, then there are caretaker provisions about the levels of expenditure that can be signed during that period in any case.
Presumably that would have to happen by the end of January before we go into caretaker, correct? So it would have to happen before Christmas. So can we have a commitment?
Well, I think Councillor Edwards, I'm trying to put words into Councillor Edwards' mouth, you've said you'd wanted a workshop on this, so we need to engage with the community, come back, have a conversation with Council in a workshop and a briefing. I think that's what we would be doing, pretty quickly.
Mr Chair, I might need your...
I believe Councillor Mitchell was next.
Thanks, Chair. Obviously, we want a great outcome for the community with the pool. I'm a regular user of the Cleveland Pool, and don't blame the residents of Russell Island for wanting great access as well, and all that comes with that from a health and safety point of view for the kids. Might make it to, it's not a council asset, and how much are we in the driver's seat? I mean, it's a real concern, and apart from council being the cash cow, the ATM, I wonder what control we do have over this piece of infrastructure. I think the community also needs to be realistic about what hours and services are available, and I've heard some of the comments this morning, and they weren't all 100% accurate, but appreciate the intent of their words. We have a year, and taking up from Councillor Tulsey's concerns, this involves two levels of government. It's going to involve multiple agencies. I'm hopeful that a sustainable and effective MOU can be entered into before, but it was the same concern that if it's not quite there, I think we need an interim safe agreement, because I think this is going to be relatively complex. So I'll just raise my add my concerns to that as well, that we need to do this once, do it right. So whatever the organisation needs to do for that, and councillors, let's do that. And taking up from Councillor Bishop's ideas on keeping all options open, I think they are. I think those, and absolutely, that's cooperative of some sort, and that's the most effective, super. But I think let's keep all options on the table to make this a sustainable and effective service into the future. But back to my first concern, if it's not our asset, gee, let's make sure that we don't go further than is appropriate for our community.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Councillor Gollo.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify through you to Councillor Edwards. Just the we operationally fund the pool, but Education Queensland, are they doing the maintenance, or are we doing all the maintenance as well? Because we seem to have this joint partnership.
My understanding is that there's a financial contribution from EDQ. I'd have to say from officers arranging what that arrangement is.
Because who's actually doing the actual on-ground work? There was a bit of a spray there saying that the grass is terrible and there's ants and everything looks poor.
I think Councillor Golly, those will come out in a workshop at the cost and so forth after community consultation. So
well, no, my point is if we're... Yeah. Also what Councillor Mitchell said, if we're... All roads seem to lead to council. It doesn't matter what it is, it's the first point of call, blame council. So what I'd like to just really understand here is that are we giving money, but someone else is actually maintaining it on the deck, so to speak? How far does our understanding go here of the works actually being done? Or are we giving money but have no oversight on what's actually being done over there? The other thing is, if it's only open in certain times, wouldn't that be based on use? Wouldn't that be based on statistics of it's only being used more regular on a weekend as opposed to...
Is that point of order, Councillor?
Yes. Yeah. But Chairman, we're workshopping in this, and it's a simple thing about engaging the community when we negotiate the new contract. So we don't need to workshop it now.
Yeah, I agree, Councillor. I think all these questions will be answered in workshops, and I think I have Councillor Gleeson next, so I'll go to you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll keep it fairly sweet, short and sweet. Look, we've got a pool in Cowbar State College as well. I can see what's going to happen, how this is going to play out when the MOU expires. The Education Department will take it over, and it won't be available to the public full stop, which is what has happened at Cowbar. I think that's what we've got to be very cautious of when we enter into this new arrangement. I think, look, there's an asset over there, and the community want to see it open 24/7. I'd love to see the Cowbar open, pool open one day a week. That would be terrific. But I think people have to just be a little bit wary of how this may play out.
Councillor Elliott. Councillor McGlary.
I was just going to say to Councillor Edwards, if anything can be done in the meantime about that cleaning up, that's all just with the ants and that, with Education Queensland going forward. I know that...
Sure. Yes. Point of order. Councillor Edwards. Yes, please. Thank God.
Thank you, everyone. I'm pleased with what I've heard. I was under the... somebody told me, an officer told me quite some time ago that EDQ is in the business of education, not pools, and I think there was some reluctance that they took it over anyway. So there's always that opportunity to explore if there's a benefit for if they want to reverse it back. But I'll leave that for officers to discuss in the workshop, but I'll leave it to that. Thank you.
You present the motion. Are those in favour? Councillor McGlary, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor... Oh, it's unanimous, sorry. Let's do all that. Unanimous. Thank you. Okay, no urgent business without notice that I'm aware of. Now we go. Do we need to go into confidential?
No, that's fine.
Did you break through to get the smile off your face, Councillor Elliott? Can we put those on the screen, please? Okay, I move for 19.1. Moved by Councillor Elliott, seconded by Councillor Edwards. Are those in favour? Carried unanimously. 19.2, can I have a mover, please? Moved by Councillor Mitchell, seconded by Councillor Elliott. All in favour? Carried unanimously. 19.3, can I have a... Are you moving that, Councillor? I have to go a bit slower. Mindful of your...
Flagging an alternate...
Are we going to Fiona?
No, you did it.
we have a without the scuff kind of just remember the report is confidential, so yeah, so the motion that is on the board is the one we're looking at. If that's not acceptable, then we will have to go into confidential. So that was it. Yeah, well, this one's being moved first. Do I have a oh, it's the mic. Who's moving it? Councillor Elliott? Do you have a seconder?
Can I move?
Well, I'll second that. Confidential now. Okay. So I'm going to move into confidential. Councillor Edwards is moving to confidential. All in favour?
The seconder?
Seconder. Oh, did you move it, Councillor? I thought you were talking. Councillor Baglari moved to confidential. Seconded by?
I seconded that.
Councillor Bishop, all in favour? Carried. Those in favour? Those in favour? Councillor Baglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Telfy, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop and Councillor Hewlett. Those against, Councillor Elliott and Councillor Gollet. Yes. And I have at this point I have to ask the gallery to please leave. Thank you. Yes, I guess that's I thought you were happy. So, okay, let's just go to we've done 19.1 and 19.2, 19.3. So I'm not saying. We're at a confidential.
We're in public session. The councillors have put up the motion that they're moving to. They're moving the motion is the motion that should be presented to on an open forum. I wouldn't be putting up a confidential.
Let's do that again now, even though we've...
No. Yeah. So my advice to you is that's not the case, and I apologise for any confusion. I believe the motion being presented is the one on the screen, and that's as long as it's been seconded.
So this item 19.3 option has been moved by Councillor Talpey. Yes, it is. Moved by Councillor Talpey, by Councillor Baglari. Those in favour? Carried unanimously. Sorry. But you had your hand up, Murray. Those in favour, Councillor Baglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Gollet, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Telfy, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop and Councillor Hewlett. Those against, Councillor Elliott. 19.4. You moving it? Moved by Councillor Baglari. We'll just wait for it to come up. Council 19.4, moved by Councillor Baglari, seconded by Councillor Bishop. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. 19.5, moved by Councillor Mitchell, seconded by Councillor Baglari. We'll wait for it to come up, so we're all legitimate. 19.5, carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. I declare the meeting closed at 12:36 p.m. Thank you. Thank you.